Handwriting is one of those skills that we think is just going to happen. That is something that comes natural. But my guest today, Holly, founder of Squiggle Squad, might change your mind on that. We are going to be talking about how foundational handwriting actually is to reading, writing, brain development, and even attention. Holly has spent years helping other educators and even parents like you to teach handwriting in a way that's actually going to help them to form the letters so that they have space to learn to read and to spell and all kinds of amazing things that come along with the handwriting process. This conversation is a powerful guide, especially for parents or educators who want to better understand how handwriting can actually support literacy, what's actually happening in their brain, and how to make handwriting instruction more engaging and developmentally appropriate for these young kids. So whether you're homeschooling or you're just trying to support your child in those early years, this episode is crucial. Holly is going to offer insights, strategies, and tools that can truly make a difference in your handwriting instruction. So let's dive in. Welcome to the Foundations of Learning podcast. I hope to inspire you to actively participate in your child's learning journey, fostering a love for knowledge and nurturing the skills necessary for success in a rapidly changing world.
All right, Holly. So we've been talking so much about motherhood and birthing and all of that good stuff. But I do want to get into why you're here, which is your business, Squiggle Squad. So can you tell us a little bit about your journey and what led you to focus specifically on handwriting instruction?
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fun. And I like nothing more than to talk about our children and education. So, yes. Squiggle Squad was a long time coming. It didn't start with an idea, you know, an aha moment, but rather over many, many years of learning about children, how they learn, and the important components of education, especially as kids go up the pipeline. So handwriting is a basic, fundamental, foundational skill. And much like reading, maybe even like phonics, like breaking it down even more, if you don't have those basics and you get pushed up the pipeline, you are going to be struggling to reach those higher level learning things that you're trying to learn. So I was a teacher. In the end, I was in a classroom teaching third, fourth, and fifth grade students in so those three grades over several subjects, and I was kind of coming to a new place in my education journey. So seeing it from this angle was really eye-opening to me. I'll back up for just a minute. I started in education as a homeschooling mom. Never planned to homeschool, had never even heard of homeschool. Remember, this was now over 25 years, almost 30 years ago that this happened. So homeschooling was not a thing back when I started. It was very underground. Social services could still show up at your house if people found out that you were not putting your kids in school. And I'd never heard the word homeschooling. That word first entered my vocabulary when a babysitter of mine told me that she was homeschooled when I asked her where she went to school. And that started this whole like mind-blowing idea that I could actually have my kids at home. And at first I was absolutely against it. It was not going to happen. So that's a story in and of itself. Long story short, I ended up homeschooling all four of my children, two boys and two girls. And one of them ended up being dyslexic. We didn't know that for a long, long time. And I have a lefty. They all learn very, very differently. And through that journey of almost 18, 19 years of teaching my own children and subsequently community kids, co-ops, science labs, all of that that goes into it, into homeschooling your own kids, you end up co-oping with community. Through all of that, I got to watch these kids and others go from early stage learning up until very high level learning, up into calculus and composition, story composition, and all of that. So that was a great beginning. For me, as I stepped into private and public school education, I was very, very acutely aware of the needs of kids at different stages of their academic development. So when I ended up getting my master's in curriculum and development. My focus was on educational neuroscience, where I really wanted to bridge the gap between what we were finding in science and what we were actually doing in the classroom. And when I went into public school teaching, got my California State teaching credential, that's when I was working in this classroom. It was a dual language, very small rural school, and we were teaching third, fourth, and fifth grade students. It was there that I was becoming increasingly frustrated and sad, actually, to see the kids coming up the pipeline without those foundational basic skills. And I was charged with teaching them higher level learning that I couldn't even begin to show them unless we touched on those basics and built back up. So that year, COVID happened. And at that point, I needed to decide how I was going to move forward. Do I stay in classrooms teaching one year at a time, one grade at a time, one child at a time? Or do I try to step outside and make a bigger difference, filling a gap that I saw was clearly, clearly missing? And that was, we had neglected and forgotten the importance of handwriting instruction at the basic level so that kids can develop a transcription skill that I, as a teacher of older children, needed them to know, and they were not getting. So Squiggle Squad's origin story really came over years of me having coached in some kindergarten teachers in private school and watching children. First of all, it became clear that teachers actually were not being taught how to teach handwriting. So that was one of the aha, like, you know, pieces of the puzzle that I was recognizing. So teachers weren't being trained well. Admin, teachers, schools were not really understanding the significance of not teaching handwriting. That those those results or consequences had not been fully realized. And parents assumed they were being taught handwriting. So it was in those classrooms that I tried out this idea of Squiggle Squad, which is a very different approach to handwriting instruction. And the kids absolutely loved it. And we got results a lot faster for handwriting instruction. So COVID kind of kicked me out of the classroom, made me pause, consider where I was going to take my career, and here we are.
I love that. Yeah, I mean, there were so many good little, you know, tidbits in there that you were talking about as far as knowing the scope and sequence of what kids need based on your homeschooling experience, right? Because I think that's one thing that you really have to think about as an educator, right? I taught first grade, so I had to think about, okay, where, you know, what did they learn in kindergarten? And if I have a kid that's, you know, above grade level, like, where do they need to go? So you kind of have to have like both of those in your brain at the same time. And then what do they need in first grade? So it's like this continuum that you need, but you got that on a mass scale because you were able to homeschool your kids, you know, all throughout, you know, kindergarten to high school, which I think, you know, would be, I don't know. I think that's like the scariest part for me, because I want to homeschool my daughter, is like, I'm like, okay, like how are we going to do this? And like, I'm going to be the expert in all of these things. And I mean, you don't have to be, you can outsource and all kinds of things. And I do think, you know, when you were homeschooling, I really don't know how you did it without the internet. I like applaud those of you that did it, you know, a long, long time ago, because with the internet today, like, you really can homeschool your child and outsource so many things if you wanted to do it that way, or you could buy, you know, scripted curriculums, or you could do, you know, whatever you want with it. But, yeah, I think that's amazing. And then you said that you know, you noticed that there were holes in these older kids once you got to the higher grades. And that was one thing that was really funny is I would have like fourth grade teachers coming down to me in first grade and being like, hey, these guys don't have X, Y, and Z, and I don't really know what to do or how to do it. Like, how do I teach them, you know, this phonic skill? Or how do I teach them, you know, how to write a sentence because they're struggling in that? Like, so like the basics that they should have gotten back in, you know, kindergarten, first, second, third, and they didn't have them. And then they were like, I don't know how to even teach this because I wasn't trained in it. And you know, so I think it's so important that, like you said, they get the foundation set and they have the foundations that they need, because if they don't, it's really like that fourth, fifth grade is when you really start to see their holes, because they have to be able to do such advanced things. And so then all of a sudden it's like, oh boy, okay, we can't even read the text that we're supposed to be reading, or we can't even write a sentence that's coherent, or I know we're going to talk about this a little bit, like I can't read your handwriting, or maybe, you know, whatever it is. And so you get to see like all these holes. And so let's talk a little bit about like what you said, what is overlooked and is not taught in colleges. And I can, you know, tell you that it's definitely not something that's taught. I mean, I wasn't even taught the correct way to teach reading. I was taught more of a balanced literacy approach, yep, and not a phonics approach, which is wild, because I literally graduated, let's see, what is it? 6 years ago. And I didn't get taught that. So yeah. I think it's really crazy because, yeah, we weren't taught handwriting. It was just like, yeah, you know, teach them how to do the letter and that's good and move on. And really, if you don't even get to that, it's really not that big of a deal, like whatever. So let's talk about handwriting. Why is it such an essential part of learning to read and write? Like, how is this all connected?
Yeah, I just loved listening to you. I could have jumped in at any moment, but I just 100% agree with where you were going with all that. A lot, well, you're experiencing this as a young mom of a young baby, that a lot of what we teach our kids comes very naturally to us. Smiling at them, facial expressions, voices, touch, teaching them how to eat, teaching them how to, you know, all the stuff your baby will get to, sitting up and crawling and, excuse me, being an encouragement to them as they sort of naturally develop these skills. And good attentive parents inadvertently teach the kids without really knowing how much they're teaching. They're teaching them smile. They're teaching them babble. They're teaching them to reach out and grab something. They put a book in front of them when they're 4 months old, and they're teaching their eyes to move back and forth. And all of that affects a baby neurologically. And so it seems, you know, it stands to reason that as they start to get towards a more intentional teaching, we fall back on those things that feel natural to us and that we can sort of reason in our mommy brain and even in our teacher brain to try to get kids to do. And some of those things will come naturally to children, like when a teacher stands at the front of the classroom and speaks. Kids are listening to their words. They're watching his or her face. They're seeing how the mouth moves. They're getting eye contact. They're moving their eyes as a teacher points to something in the room. So all of that is coming kind of naturally. Unfortunately, when it comes to the base skills of reading and writing, the base of literacy in general, those skills do not come naturally. Those are human constructs, and they're something that need to be intentionally imparted. And it helps for a teacher or parent to understand the natural progression of development of a child's brain in order to introduce things in an age-appropriate, developmentally appropriate way so that a child can actually do it and have the intrinsic reward of self-accomplishment. And that pushes them to want to learn the next thing. That's what we call the love of learning. is it happens neurologically. There's something hormonal about it that flushes that dopamine. We get a rush of adrenaline and we're like, this is cool. And unfortunately, when we put kids in classrooms where there's a lot of students and it's really hard to meet those kids one-on-one exactly where they are developmentally, we risk frustrating kids mentally and physically, and it shuts kids down. So then they become scared to learn. They become defensive of their inability to know something or try something. Sometimes it comes out as perfectionist. We'll call them a perfectionist because she doesn't want to do it because she can't do it right. That's actually a frustration for that little one that needs to be addressed. And the way it can be addressed is by backing up to her biological, physical, and cognitive needs and meeting her or him right where he is. Handwriting is this concept, like, it magnified. Because we have dropped explicit instruction of handwriting in classrooms. I will say that when I go across the United States and I talk to moms at homeschool conferences and dads at homeschool conferences, they're kind of on it. I would say that the homeschool community, they love their kids. They want to do right by them. And more times than not, with the exception of maybe kids or parents under the age of, say, 28, they themselves have been taught how to write. So to them, it's easy. It's a no-brainer that we are going to teach our children how to write. And so that stays natural to them, and they do it. In classrooms, however, our culture has pushed handwriting to the back table, literally. We make a little station, we give them a workbook, and we say, go practice your handwriting as if they know what that even means. So for us to understand the progression of a child's learning, we really need to figure out why we're teaching handwriting and how a child needs us to approach handwriting instruction so that they can learn it in the developmentally appropriate way, feel good about it, and then use it regularly as a tool in their education journey.
I love that. There were so many amazing things that you just said. And I love that you said, the number one thing I love that you said is that it doesn't come naturally. That is like the biggest thing that I've seen, because I do post a lot on my social media about, you know, phonics instruction, because I just know that, you know, we have decades of neuroscience. There were people that were in linguistics and psychologists, and like this giant group of people that literally came together and they were like, let's look at how our brains actually interpret, you know, the alphabetic system that we have in place, and what is the best way to teach them this skill, you know? So we're looking at actual neuroscience, and they scanned adults' brains, they scanned kids' brains that, you know, maybe they hadn't learned to read yet, and now we're learning to read, and what parts of the brains are firing off, what, you know, sequence do we need to teach it in? Does it need to be explicit? Like, we have so much data on this. So that's why I was like so angry that I didn't get taught this in my Agreed. You know, college years, because I'm like,
yep,
it's literally been something that we've had for like 40 decades. Years or something, 40, like 50. Decades and decades, mm-hmm. or 50 years. Yeah. And I'm like, yep. I literally just graduated. Like, how is this not being taught? Like, I just, it drives me crazy. Anyways, so I do a lot of content on social media to like let people know, like, this is the way we need to be teaching, you know, reading. And specifically, they did this research for kids with dyslexia. Like, they wanted to figure out, like, hey, these kids with dyslexia are struggling to learn to read and write, and we need to be able to help them. And then they started to do all of this research, and they were like, well, wait a second, actually, maybe all of these kids need this, you know? And now we know, like, there's phonological awareness, which is just understanding, you know, the sounds in our words and the different parts of the sounds in our words and being able to manipulate those sounds. And that 80% of struggling readers have a deficit in this area, in phonological processing. Anyways, and so I just,
want parents and teachers and everyone to know that it is not natural, and you are literally rewiring their brain, and you have to have an explicit and systematic way to teach these things, because if you don't, they're going to get lost in the weeds. And you might think like, oh my, you know, I just read to my child and they're going to learn to read. But that is so not the case, because it's not like language. It's not oral language, which comes so naturally to our brains, right? You can talk to your kid and, you know, sing songs with them and do nursery rhymes and all of this, and they're going to, you know, gain a vocabulary. And even if you read to them, gives them background knowledge, it gives them, you know, builds vocabulary. It teaches them a love of literacy and learning through stories and all kinds of things. But the one thing it's not going to do is teach them to read. And people will be like, well, no, that's not true, because, you know, my mom read to me and I just learned how to read. And I'm like, well, here's the thing. There is like a tiny chunk of people, like 20%, I think, is like 20 to 30% of people can learn to read through being read to and exposure to books. But even then, they found that their spelling is not great, because they have to memorize words instead of understanding our alphabetic code, which it is a code. And you just have to know, you know, which code goes where in the sounds of the word and which, you know, spelling pattern you need to use in that. And then also it helps you to understand words. Like, vocabulary used to be taught in a way that was like, here is a vocabulary word, this is the definition, draw a picture. And it's like, no, if you have prefixes and suffixes and you have a base word or root word, all of these things have meaning. And when we put it together, it becomes the definition, right? So like, there's so many things that I think people need to understand in all of it, right? And handwriting is a piece that I have never really talked about, because they don't really talk about that. Even in the science of reading, honestly, they do not talk about handwriting. And it's something that just, it goes to the wayside. And like you said, unless you were taught in school, like, hey, this is, you know, handwriting. And I think people know, like, oh, I need to have them trace the letter, right? Oh, we'll trace it and whatever. But I think there is more to it, which I hope we can get into, like, of all of handwriting. Like, people might think of it as, oh, it's just cursive, or, oh, it's just tracing a letter. So let's kind of talk a little bit more into the weeds on how the process of, let's just say, writing letters by hand actually helps the child to internalize that letter sound relationship.
Yes. Oh my goodness. You touched on a few things. If I could just back up just a minute, there's a couple things that I really want to highlight in what you just said.
Help your child become a confident reader with letters and sounds. This structured curriculum includes lesson plans, games, and multi-sensory activities to make learning letters fun and effective. Get started today at k3homeschoolfoundations.com or check out the link down below.
First of all, that it's a code. That is a really important aspect of understanding language, that there is a decoding that happens in reading, and there is an encoding that happens when you write. Yep. And we are teaching a very abstract concept. And when you think about a child's brain, the very first thing that starts to happen when it comes to taking in the world around them is naming things. So mama, dada, dog, up. Up would be an action. So, but they look up when they say it, because they are noticing that that's a thing, that that's a direction that I'm noticing. You know, whatever, they recognize toys and their food and that kind of stuff, and they name it. That is a very concrete idea. Kids think very concretely the younger they are. The notion of language as being something that requires understanding symbolism is very abstract. So I can look at a letter on a page and I can name it a B. I see that shape, it's called a B. Just like I see that shape, it's called a cat. You know, I see that shape, it's called a B. That is why teaching children letter names when they're very, very young is easy, because they can see it and they can name it, but they don't understand it. The full understanding that that letter is a symbol for a sound that spells a word that can be used in a sentence to express a thought is a very complex idea. So when you start, you go into a first grade class, and the very first thing they're doing is teaching, showing them a sentence, asking them to put the words in the order of a correct sentence, capitalize it and put a period, and then write it is so complex, especially for those little boys that are coming in and have not even acquired the kindergarten skills that they needed to acquire. And now we're just jumping in. You can see how this would be very frustrating. The next thing that I want to, you had said something, I lost it. But basically, I want to talk about the progression. There is a progression, and it is really important for teachers and parents to understand that progression. They don't have to be an expert in it. You just need to know that it is a progression, and that if you get to a part of that spectrum that you're expecting them to do, and they have not gone through that, then you need to back up. And so I don't know how to approach this exactly. You can tell me how best, but in terms of handwriting instruction, so much depends on the age of the child, their previous exposure to letters and letter sounds, their motor skill ability, and the expectation of the teacher and the grade. So what Squiggle Squad does that is unique is separates the motor skill from the letter learning, because it's two separate skills that kids need to have in order to put it together to, you know, for that more complex ask. A lot of times kids can name a letter, but they can't hold a pencil. So if I'm asking them to write a word, I've just made that whole task really complex. And so my best strategy is to pull it apart. Pull it apart, give them practice in the individual components that will be required of them in order to write. And then as they're ready, all of that converges. And it happens pretty quickly, by the way. If you're intentional and you're deliberate and you give them the time they need, which is not that much time, just be explicit about it, they pick it up pretty quick. It's when you don't explicitly teach them that they get lost. And when they get lost, they can't catch back up. They don't know. They don't know enough to ask the questions. They don't know enough to figure out where they're going wrong or what they're missing. They only know that they can't do it, and so it's up to us to see why they can't do it, and start back. Am I on track, kind of, for where you want to go?
Yeah, 100%. And I do think I think it's important what you just said is separating learning the letter and the handwriting piece, because like you had said, like you have to have, there's, it's so complex. It's not a concrete method. And as you said, abstract thinking is a very high level thinking, right? It's not easy for us to do. And kids are developing in their brain certain things to be able to do certain things. And so I actually did a podcast episode on this, on like, you know, are they really behind in reading, or is their brain just literally not ready for this yet? Because there's actual science that has come out now when they're looking at like the science of reading and everything, and the different parts of your brain that have to be functioning at a higher level in order to do specific tasks and to be able to think about it in an abstract way, like what you're talking about. And so they were saying, like, even like the word processing part of the brain, the part that's going to turn these words into so-and-so called sight words and things, isn't usually like fully developed until around the age of 7. Although if you have early instruction, it can develop a little bit faster because you are training your brain. You are, you know, giving new synapses in your brain to then be able to do said skill. However, it is still very abstract. So, like, for example, you know,
spelling is going to be way more complicated for a child to do than reading a word. Decoding is actually easier than encoding because you have all of these things that you're doing. So when you're spelling a word, you have to first think, okay, what is the word I'm spelling? Whether that's, let's just say hat, right? And then you have to say, okay, now I have to break hat into these individual sounds. At. Okay, now I have to think about what letter represents the h sound, what represents the a sound and the t sound, and I have to keep them in order so that when I go to read the word after I've written it, I know what it says. And then I also have to have that handwriting piece. I have to remember, how do I form the letter H? Like there is so much that is going into that. And I know we actually kind of had a conversation about this when we talked the other day. But I want you to kind of go into detail for my audience here when we're talking about how much overload in your brain happens when you are trying to do all of those things. Mm-hmm. If handwriting is natural and they know, well, now natural, right? Because we've explicitly taught it, that they are forming that letter without all of the overload in their brain of, oh no, I have to write this letter H now and I can't remember and where do I start? And how does that, I guess, kind of go into what you saw in the delays in these older grades if they weren't, if handwriting wasn't natural to them anymore? Or not anymore, but it was never taught to them.
Right. Okay. So there's a lot in that. First of all, we should, let's just clarify what the end goal of handwriting instruction is.
Yeah,
the end goal of handwriting instruction, while is not beautiful penmanship. It used to be. It used to be when our culture depended on handwriting as a form of negotiation, business transactions, niceties, courtesies, you know, the thank you cards and the invites to social events. Handwriting penmanship was very important, but that is a time gone by. And we don't even see handwriting on a regular basis, you know, regularly used in day-to-day anymore. So we need to rethink why we're teaching handwriting, why it's so important at a younger, and in the younger years, and why it's still relevant given that we're on all these digital technologies. Again, I'd like to really emphasize the motor skill versus the cognitive. So we need them to have automatic letter formation that is efficient and legible. You referred to the load, the cognitive load that happens when you ask a child to do something that effectively takes place in what is known as called the working memory. I'm sure a lot of your audience knows that. The working memory is limited by age in part. So the younger you are, the less working memory you have, the less familiar you are with something, the less you're going to be able to hold that in your working memory while you deal with the task at hand. The whole idea of handwriting instruction is to make it, first of all, known. Kiddo needs to know how to form the letter H. And then to make it automatic, and then to use it for the teacher's purposes, for the student's purposes, as a tool for learning and communicating. So if we back way up, we first need to make sure that that kiddo has the motor skills that they need to write. That's what comes first anyway. So on the one hand, you're learning to recognize letters. You're learning what sound the letters make. You're learning to name the letters in order. And then on the other side, we're practicing the motor skills that you are going to need to know in order to write that letter. So I need to know that my kiddos can do top to bottom, that they can do a counterclockwise circle up and around, which is super hard and not natural for kids. By the way, we don't know why this happens, but in the brain, more naturally to most kids is a bottom to top and a clockwise circle, not a counterclockwise circle. Both of those actions are counterintuitive to handwriting. So that means that we have to wire the brain to practice those movements. And the only way that you really ingrain motor skill into a child's little body is repetition. And so we need to find fun, innovative ways to regularly practice that movement that is going to be necessary for writing fluidly. The end goal, I probably didn't finish that thought. So the end goal, if it's not beautiful, perfect penmanship, what is it? It is automatic, easy, efficient handwriting usage. So that means, and ultimately legible. We'd like people to be able to read it. That's good. But that means working on it. It means using it. It's a little bit like, I shared this with you a little bit earlier. I really liken it to sports and playing music. That if you are going to master either of it, all of those things, then you pull apart the skills, you practice them so that it becomes ingrained in your muscle memory. And when you go to do your game or play your concert, you are not, it's not gumming up here in your working memory. It is automatically flowing through your body. And that's what a lot of us have with handwriting, but that's because we used handwriting growing up. Now these kids are getting on digital devices, they're using keyboards, and their transcription skills are horrible. If they do not have encoding skills, as teachers will totally back me up on this one, it is nearly impossible to teach them how to write an essay if they can barely get a sentence out in their morning journal. Mm-hmm. And it starts with this, you know, improving the skill of writing by hand. And or I'll give you, the keyboard is a transcription tool, but we're not teaching keyboarding either. If we don't have flow of hand or flow of fingers on the keyboard, we cannot have flow of thought. So we need to get that physical ability tucked back into our automatic, the part of our brain that stores for automaticity, so that it just flows. And that, you know, that starts super, super early, and it has to be regularly practiced. And it can be practiced across subjects and whatnot. It just needs to be, you know, consistently done and coached so that it's done correctly.
Yeah, I think that's super important. And I kind of want to touch on a little bit on the technology piece, because I feel like, you know, a lot of people might say, like, I don't even understand why we're having this conversation. Kind of like what you said, like, what's the point, right? Especially when we are in the day and age of technology and we use our phones to communicate, which we're typing, you know, with our thumbs, or we're using a computer to write an email or whatever it is. And even now, like, right, like when you're even in my school, the older kids that were, I want to say third through fifth. Yeah. Cause I didn't have sixth grade. They went to middle school, but anyways, third through fifth, they had computer, like laptops. Right. And so they were able to use their laptops to write their essays and things like that. So, I guess there's a couple of things in this question. Is that detrimental that we are having them use computers more than we are having them write? And also, is it even important with the, you know, new age technology that they learn to write with a pencil or like a marker or whatever? Like, what are the actual benefits in other areas, or just the benefits overall in teaching handwriting if they're going to end up using a phone and computer?
That's such a good question. But I will tell you, if you go to any preschool, kinder, first grade teacher, and you ask them if kids are ready to actually be using the keyboard as a writing instrument, that just physically, they are not.
Heck no. No, no, no.
They don't have those skills. But moreover, and maybe more importantly, because I don't want to imply that handwriting is only important to the younger years, handwriting changes the way we think. It changes the way we physically, mentally, cognitively process. And that is true for all ages. authors, you can the likes of like Stephen King or I heard Rowling, they go to pen and paper when they need to think deeper, harder, longer about what they're going to be writing. It slows down the thinking process, not in a bad way. It slows us down to actually mine the treasure that is in our brain that needs to figure out syntax and vocabulary and how I'm going to express this thought in such a way that those reading my words are going to actually understand what I'm trying to say. That is mastery. But you don't get to mastery if you don't start in kindergarten. You don't get to mastery if you don't map language onto your brain. And right now, we very naturally learn language through our eyes, through our ears, through our mouth. Writing language by hand is a kinesthetic connection. It means that you move through language unlike anything else, any other mode. There is nothing like handwriting that actually moves. It's like drawing language. It turns language inside out because you take language in from the outside. Now I have to turn it back out to you. And handwriting physically makes me do that. I have to connect to language in a unique way when I do that. It changes the brain. There's some really great studies on this. Maybe I could give you a connection in your show notes to a study done by Dr. Karen James. I want to say she's University of Indiana, something like that. Don't hold me to that. I will get you that information. Anyway, perfect. She did one of my favorite studies ever that connected the kinesthetic movement and learning of language to what happens cognitively in the brain and how important that is in language acquisition and learning to master language. I think it's beautiful, and I think that people who do it understand that, because people who have done it and stopped doing it can feel what they're missing in their brain. I will say, too, that when I was teaching up in third, fourth, and fifth grade, and I was teaching history in fifth grade, and I needed those kids to write me paragraphs and essays on what we were doing, and their transcription skills on the computer were not working. It was sometimes two fingers, sometimes one finger pecking. Mm-hmm. When we get them on computers and phones and tablets, the earlier we get them on there, the earlier they develop motor skill habits that we cannot break later. So you let them poke around on a computer in first grade and then try to teach them keyboarding in third grade. It's already hard to teach keyboarding, but to teach them after they've already found their own way it's like swimming upstream. So setting those habits early, especially the motor skill habits, those motor skill habits are absolutely ingrained. And by second grade, it is really hard to change any of them.
Yeah, I think that's important because it is really a habit that we're kind of setting, right? With handwriting, yes. With everything we're talking about, it almost becomes, we're trying to make it become a natural thing. So we're rewiring, right? And if they wire that incorrectly, then it's really, really hard to break that connection that they've, because it's a new synapses in your brain. Right. So now you have to break that synapses and, you know, create a new one that's actually in the right, you know, wiring or whatever. And one thing I do want to note that you were kind of talking about as far as, I would say the comprehension or even the attention or the mastery of something. So I'm just going to give an example just from my own experience is when I was in college, I type way faster, obviously, than I write. That's just for everyone, right? And so I was, for a second there in college, I was using my laptop and I would use it for notes and I was typing out notes.
But I would find that after the class, like I would forget what in the heck I learned. So then this was just me thinking like, I don't know, I'm just going to switch up the mode of how I'm taking notes and I'm going to do it by hand. And I'm just going to see if that actually like helps. And what I noticed is that when I was taking notes on my computer, I was literally just like everything they said, just like the whole time. Right. And I wasn't really thinking about what I was writing, but when I would do it by hand, I was listening to like specific things that I thought, okay, this is like one of the most important pieces and I have to write it down in a way that I can understand it quickly and also, you know, have it for later when I'm studying for my test or whatever it is, right? So it was like a higher level of thinking that I had to do when I was taking notes by hand. But if I wasn't, you know, like good at transcribing that, like I didn't have that handwriting ability, like that's impossible. But it does make you slow down and really think about what it is that you're writing, and it really like it changed the game for me in college. Like once I figured out, I was like, oh, okay, well I need to just, that computer is there for when I need to like write essays and everything. And I even sometimes would handwrite my essay before I wrote it on my computer because it was easier for me to like, okay, let's read my textbook. Like, what is it trying to teach me here? Okay, let's like write down certain key points that I want to remember. And then I would like kind of write it out and then I would do it on my computer. And it was like night and day difference. It took me longer, but I feel like I understood the content better and I was able to actually express what I wanted to express better.
I am so glad you brought that up as an example because it's a perfect example of how we change our thinking when we write by hand.
I know I'm not the only mom who wants to be present with her kids, but sometimes I have no idea what to actually do with them. Once my daughter becomes a toddler, I already know I'll want more than just screen-free time. I'll want connection, learning, and purposeful play. But coming up with those ideas on my own every day, that sounds exhausting. That's why I love what Learning with Kelsey offers. These boxes are full of hands-on, play-based activities designed to help you connect, teach, and enjoy your child all without prep. Whether it's fine motor skills, letters, numbers, or sensory play, there's something for every age and stage. So if you're like me, wanting to make learning meaningful at home, use my link and get 15% off your first box. You can be the teacher, guide, and safe place for your child's needs, and it doesn't have to be complicated. Parents, have you ever wondered what your kids are really learning about important topics like taxes, freedom, and responsibility? As an educator, I once had to teach a social studies lesson that only focused on the positives of taxes, completely ignoring the downsides of overtaxation or the importance of personal responsibility. It made me realize how limited the perspective is in many traditional curricula. That's why I'm so passionate about the Tuttle Twins books. These books teach kids both sides of important issues like economics, freedom, and entrepreneurship in a way that's fun, engaging, and easy to understand. They help children think critically and understand the world in a more balanced way. If you're ready to check it out, use my link down below to explore their incredible resources, give your kids the tools to think for themselves, and support my podcast.
And not only all those things that you just shared, but also you had to condense what the professor was saying, mm-hmm. which means you had to make sense of it as he mm-hmm. was saying it, and then make sense of it in your own being, mm-hmm. and then put it down so that you could access it again later. Mm-hmm. That is so difficult. And if mm-hmm. I could back up and take you as a student in college, back you up into a student as a third or fourth grader, what are the skills that we as third and fourth grade teachers need to be imparting so that you as a university student can use those skills to learn? And I will tell you some of the things related to handwriting that are not happening anymore in classrooms. We are not handwriting on a board for students to copy on their papers. Mm. That is a skill that you have to train, and it does several things. One, it actually gives the student an opportunity to see handwriting modeled. In today's mm-hmm. day and age, You stick it up on a computer. They show kids how to write by hand by putting a robot on a computer screen with a dot, no pencil, no hand, no even like understandable things. They just say, this is how an H is drawn. Not even the teacher's voice. And they do the H on the thing, and then they shove them over to a table and say, practice your handwriting. That kid did not see a pencil. It did not see a hand holding a pencil. It didn't see the actual pencil forming the letter. And now they're just expected to go do it. They're also not seeing their parents writing, not very often, maybe some, but they're really not, because we're on our phones. Mm-hmm. And they're not seeing the teachers using a pencil, because a lot of them are maybe if it's a good classroom, they're using a stylus on a board. But in classes around here, the whiteboards are gone. The chalkboards are gone. I know one teacher that uses an easel in her kindergarten class. I was very proud of her. Mm-hmm. But those boards are being used, I don't know, to put posters up or something. They're just not being used to actually show children how to encode writing by hand.
Yeah, I really didn't even think about that. I mean, so my team teacher and I, we created PowerPoints that was integrating what we were learning about the science of reading and everything. And our curriculum was okay. It wasn't great, though. It wasn't like doing all of the things that we needed to do. So we just sat down and we're like, hey, we're going to take what we're learning. We're going to create PowerPoints because we had an iPad, right? I had a whiteboard. So I did have a whiteboard and I used that a lot. Like when we would do our writing and our thinking time during writing, we used thinking maps, which if no one knows what thinking maps are, like I highly suggest that people go and look at what thinking maps are and learn about how to use them, because that was like the biggest game changer for me in teaching littles how to write. Anyways, I'm going off topic, but I would draw, because we would draw the thinking maps. They couldn't just use it on like a piece of paper. They had to draw it themselves. So, you know, we were drawing our circle maps and our tree maps to organize our thoughts. And I would write it out on the whiteboard and we would do it together, because I would use different colors, mostly because I hated writing on an iPad. It like drove me crazy. It's not natural and it doesn't feel natural, because you can't really like tell where you're starting and, you know, the motion and where it's going to end up, which you kind of have to think about that as well with these kids that are learning to write. If they're trying to do it on an iPad, it is really, really hard to do that. Maybe I'm just a special human that just can't do it very well. It drove me crazy. Yes. So I would do it on the whiteboard just because it drove me crazy. But so we would have the PowerPoint up, and a lot of the time, instead of me using the stylus, I would just go to the whiteboard because it was presented on the whiteboard, and I would use a marker and I would like write on my presentation, right, essentially. Right. And then sometimes I would obviously use my iPad so I could kind of walk around the class and make sure, like observing, like that they were doing everything correctly and all of that good stuff. But yeah, I didn't even think about that, and the fact that, you know, they're not even seeing the teacher do it. Like you're trying to teach them quote unquote handwriting, and you're not even doing it. So they have like no idea what you want to do. Yeah. Like you're assuming that this is just natural and that they're just going to be able to do it. So I think it's really funny. And one thing that you mentioned too about, you know, keyboarding, and we're not even really teaching keyboarding. Like when I think back of my school experience, right, I learned keyboarding, I think in ninth grade or something like that. Like I think we had a computer lab when I was in fifth or sixth grade or something like that. And we would go and kind of do a little bit of keyboarding, but like legit learning keyboarding was not until, I want to say it was like eighth or ninth grade or something like that. And you know, it just wasn't something we used. Like a computer was like, holy crap, we get to go use a computer. This is so cool. And it was one computer lab for the entire school. Right. And you had like 30 minutes of time on that computer. And now kids they have their own computer. You're using it constantly in school, or they have an iPad. Like if you're at a school that is one-to-one devices, every kindergartner, first grader, second grader has an iPad. Every single third, fourth, and fifth grader has a laptop, and we are using them all the time. And I think it's important to realize that, like, yeah, that is a tool and we can use this tool and this is how we use it. But we're missing that key piece, like you said, that's handwriting. And
I mean, it, through this conversation, what I'm gathering from this is handwriting is more important than just how you form a letter. It literally changes how you are taking in information, how you are, you know, regurgitating that information on a piece of paper. It's also bringing you that kinesthetic motion, especially like when you think about kids and learning, especially like dyslexic kids, right? They need a lot of kinesthetic. So, you know, when you have a dyslexic kid and you're trying to teach them to read and to write, it's really important that they have, I've seen like those, I think they're really, really cool. They're kind of like a sandpaper and they have the letters on there and they can use their finger to feel how that letter like feels essentially. Like I don't know exactly the science behind it because I'm not a specialist in this dyslexia realm of things. And you obviously had a dyslexic kid. So you might even have way more information on that because you needed to help them to learn to read and write. But that kinesthetic motion is going to, in my opinion, get it stuck in their brain more than if they were to press a button on a computer.
Yeah. And I know, I noticed that one of your previous, I think it was what you did, a BD reversal podcast, right?
Yes.
And talked a little bit about shapes. A lot of times people think that if kids reverse their shapes, that's a sign of dyslexia. But I just want to encourage people that actually the act of writing the letter, forming the letter properly by hand will help with a lot of those, to correct those reversals. A lot of times it just has to do with the way the brain is working at a very young age, mirroring shapes, and that, that eventually, will, they'll grow out of that. But it is 100% helped when you can show them the proper, let's take BD, because since that's the big obvious one, BD, the B is formed by making the straight line first and then a curve. The D is formed by making a circle first and then a line. So if they physically, back to our other point about that kinesthetic movement through a shape, if they start their D on the circle, they're going to be less likely to flip it. If you teach ball bat, first of all, I don't think of the B as being a circle and a line. I think of it as being a line and a curve because you don't actually go all the way back around with that circle when you make a B.
Yep.
And then when you teach them that, and then you teach them all letters start at the top, which they don't, they will start their B and their D at the top, and then they'll get down to where they're supposed to make that curve, and they don't know which way to go. But if we teach them instead that a D starts just below the dotted line, push up and around, come up and down, it's just not even a thing to them. That if you show them that and they practice it, they don't think twice about it. That's just the way they do it. And you can help with reversals that way, but you can also help them start to make those connections to sound. So if I say D as I write it, I'm going to be kinesthetically connecting it to a shape and a sound.
Yeah, I think that's super important and really staying consistent in how you are teaching how to form each letter. Because if you're constantly changing the way that you form the letter, they're going to get so confused. And they're like, I don't remember how to do, there's too many, you know, instructions here and too many different ways. And I don't really know which way. And then they freeze and then they get stuck and then they don't want to do it. And it's just like this, you know, snowball effect. So I do think that that's super important. And that is one aha moment that I had as a teacher was what you said with B's and D's is I had to really think, how do we differentiate a B and a D because of that mere generalization that we do have in our brain where it, if you see a dog in any position, it's still a dog. That's how our brains work. And that's why they get confused with B's and D's. And I love that you said like, that is not just because a child is reversing letters does not mean that they are dyslexic. And that was like the biggest thing that I kept seeing in my comments. Like, I think my kid's dyslexic. They're flipping letters. And I'm like, no, let's talk about this. Okay, that is going to be something that most kids are going to go through because it is a new symbol that they're learning. They're learning how to form the letters. They have to remind their brain that, hey, even though this is flipped, it still is a different symbol and how we form it and all these things. And dyslexia is a phonological processing disorder. It also has to do a lot with like comprehension and things like that. So it's like completely different than just like, oh, they reverse letters. Yeah, that is a piece of dyslexia as well, but that's like a very small portion of it. But yeah, I think it's so important that we understand that, hey, we need to stay consistent. It needs to be systematic. It needs to be explicit. Like, these are the three things in math, in reading, in writing. Yep. All of these are codes that we're using. Math is just another language that we are using. And if we don't have that systematic, explicit approach to teaching these things, it's going to make it really, really hard, and it's going to make it so that they have holes and then you have to go back and fill the holes. It's just a whole thing. So I want to talk a little bit, because we're kind of talking about, you know, kids that may struggle. So from what you have seen, what are some signs that a child might need more support with handwriting, and how can parents or educators intervene early?
Great question. So I always say, let's not fix a problem we don't have. So when it comes to choosing what pencils you use, whether or not a kid needs a pencil grip, what is stymieing their handwriting progress, it really behooves you to sit down with that child and do a observation, evaluation, assessment, and figure out what we're seeing is wrong. Is it a physical issue? Is it a letter learning issue? And pull those things apart a little bit. If it's a physical issue, there's things you're looking for, like hand strength, dexterity, which has to do with the independent movements of your fingers and wrists and thumb, pencil grip. If your pencil grip is such that you have no movement of your fingers, you can't manipulate your fingers, then that kiddo's going to need help on the pencil grip. It's not that they can't form a letter with their hand like this. They probably can, but you're going to limit their growth and improvement by not fixing it early. You're also going to cause pain later on when they're going to opt not to use this as a tool because it hurts them physically to use. So earlier's better. Again, don't fix a problem you don't have. So don't pick a pencil that's fat or short or, you know, whatever, if they can use a pencil that's standard. Just try them in a pencil that's standard. If it's working, don't need to change anything. If they're struggling, then opt to give them alternatives. The pencil grip, don't just pick any pencil grip. That, you know, those things that the aids that go on the pencils, there are a million of them. You need to assess what's hurting the child's pencil grip and meet that need. I like to give the kiddo a choice. If they're really struggling with holding the pencil correctly, and I see that it's a dexterity issue, articulation issue, then I will give them a choice of like three or four that I know help that problem. And so then they can choose the one they like the most. And I try to give them a choice of colors. So they have some agency in their handwriting improvement journey. If it's a hand strength problem, you probably should be doing things outside of writing altogether. If it's a hand strength problem, they need to hang on a monkey bar. They need to pinch a clothespin, play games with where they're pinching and matching and manipulating. They need to throw a football where they have to squeeze and hold, or, you know, where they're actually having to grip something and create movement with their hand. So again, evaluation is going to be your friend in this stage of the game. And if you're seeing across your classroom a general problem, then of course you can address it at a class level. Maybe everybody's using small pencils for semester, and it's just easier because the kids can learn how to, whatever your reasoning is. There maybe you have a lot of them that are doing a pencil tight. This is a reason to use a short pencil, by the way, if you're gripping your pencil with your fist. But that would mean you have really young kids coming up the pipeline that maybe never had a preschool experience. And so, again, did I get to your question?
Yeah, no, you definitely did. And I actually think it's very interesting because, like, I've obviously seen it's not very often. And maybe it was just because I had amazing kindergarten teachers before me that would, you know, send their kids with great pencil grip.
Yeah,
but
awesome.
But I did see kids that, like, when they're holding the pencil and they have, like, their fingers, like, straight, and you've got those kids that have, like, the double joint weird stuff going on, or they, like, bend their fingers really weird. I've seen that. And then I've actually never seen a kid try to write with it, like, in their hand like this. But I mean, like I said, it could just be because I had amazing kindergarten teachers that were really good at, like, making sure that their kids were holding it. Anyways, beside the point, I had kids that were holding it very, very different. And I never really thought of, like, connecting it to, like, hey, what is the actual problem here? And then, like, correlating that to the pencil grip. Because what I notice, I mean, this is just my own personal experience, is that, like, you know, the pencil grips that are more fat and then they kind of have, like, the grooves for where their fingers need to go on the pencil.
Yes.
And then you have the pencil grip that has, like, I don't know, there's, like, three little things that they actually, like, have to put their fingers,
stick their fingers into
it in there, you know? In my experience, I hated the fat ones with just, like, the little grooves in it, because it didn't, like, teach them necessarily. Like, I still had to fix how their hand was on the pencil, and it wasn't like there was a connection there. But those, like, the ones with, like, the little holes was a lot easier to get them to understand, okay, this is where this finger needs to go. This is where my, you know, my pointer, my middle, my thumb, this is where they need to go to hold this pencil to be able to write. Because it made them actually do more of, like, that pincer grip when they were writing. And so I guess my question is like, since there are so many pencil grips out there, like, what would you suggest for, I know you said you have to assess and see, like, what their problem really is, but I guess which one is going to be the most beneficial if you're like, I'm not 100%, maybe you're a parent, you're like, I don't really know 100%. Maybe you have resources out there that, like, you know, can help them assess what that problem is, and what pencil grip might be best if there is a problem. Can you kind of explore what I don't know if I'm asking that question properly.
I think what you might be getting at is what pencil hold is going to be okay.
Yes.
And what pencil grips might get us to that end goal.
Yes.
So again, there's two main traditional ways of holding a pencil, of course, is the tri grip, where you've got your pincher thumb and index finger pinching, and you're resting on that third finger. The other one is the quad, where you're pinching with the two fingers on top and resting on the third finger. Mm-hmm. This is how I grew up. I was told it was wrong, and then later I started using this more. I can do either pretty interchangeably without any problem. The reason why neither of those stymied my forward improvement in handwriting is because I can articulate my fingers as needed without hurting my wrist or holding anything, in one place in a strong way. The other thing that you're going to see a lot of, and I don't know if this is a new generation thing, I'm not exactly sure, I'm just seeing it more and more and more in both adults and kids, and that is the wrapping of the thumb
around. That is how I write.
Okay.
That is exactly how I do it. I don't know what, and it, I will get like, I have like an indent on one of my fingers, like where it pushes down so hard.
Calluses.
But like I like grab my pencil really weird like that. Like if I had a pencil, I'd show you, but that's kind of how I do it is like, well, I set it on this, my ring finger, like it's
okay.
set in
yeah.
my ring finger, but I kind of wrap around with my thumb. Yeah, exactly like that. That is how I write. I don't know why nobody corrected
so
it.
I
don't know.
I see nothing wrong with this. I actually see a lot of pencil artists that actually, so my observation is there must be something about control that allows, that whoever's using this as a tool, because you're still using it as a tool. It's not like mm-hmm. you've given it up. The only caution that I maybe could see is that if you had to write like this for a long time, mm-hmm. that you might, that is a tighter grip. So yep. you're physically moving those muscles of your hand and fingers into, you know, a more contracted position. Mm-hmm. So if you had to write for a longer period of time, you might want to move that thumb over there, which as an adult with a lot of dexterity, you would be able to do without mm-hmm. much problem. It's harder to ask a child to do that because yeah. they're still learning how to manipulate, you know, matching their mind and their body. So that whole coordination thing. But so that would be my only caution there. When it comes to parents trying to figure it out for their kids, just know that those two grips are fine. It's why this grip, you know, with the holes that you've put on yeah. your pencil and you hold it that way. It's why I'm okay with that, especially if the child is leaning towards a tri-grip. But if they're not, if you watch them and they are a quad grip with a wrap, and then you want them to open up yeah. like this, you might give them two or three choices. Maybe that is the best thing. The other thing to consider in that scenario is the age of the child. So mm-hmm. if the child is younger, I would say, yeah, go to that three. And as much to the classic tri-grip you can, as close to that as you can get early on, means that they're going to develop that ability, and it's going to be more natural to them later. But if yeah. you have a second or third grader that is massively frustrated because you are trying to change their grip too radically, yeah. You know, you have to, it's a negotiation thing at that age. You have to kind of let them take a little bit of agency so that they're willing to work on improvement.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's honestly super important. Okay, so we've kind of gone down into the weeds of handwriting and all of that. So yes. what does Squiggle Squad really do to make sure that we are setting the foundations in handwriting so that we can have all of the amazing benefits that we've talked about in handwriting?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked. So it is designed, every single feature in Squiggle Squad is evidence and science backed. And it helps the teacher crawl through the incremental steps that they need to take their children through. It takes them through that progression I was referring to. It separates motor skill from letter learning. And the Squiggle Squad themselves are five animals that represent a stroke in the English manuscript language. So Lines the lemur is a top to bottom, Bubbles the bunny, Curves the camel, Slide the seal, Dash the duck. They all represent a movement that the child makes. So unlike other ones where, like, you'll say A is for alligator and you'd use like the onset sound, that's not what Squiggle Squad does. Squiggle Squad is a movement. The character's favorite squiggle. So Bubbles the bunny's favorite movement to do is a counterclockwise circle up and around. So we start below the line, we push up and around. So we need that circular motion, again, to move towards fluid handwriting. And they learn those strokes in isolation. And that gives the instructor a few things. One, it gives us a vernacular to refer to when we're teaching the child to make the stroke. So we can make the association, like, remember the way Dash the Duck does it? How does Dash the Duck do it? And they go, oh. You know, and they remember because we've mm-hmm. practiced with Dash the Duck making that horizontal left to right movement. And then the animals come together to play and they make the letters. So Bubbles the bunny plays with Lines the lemur. They make the lowercase letter A. Mm-hmm. And the younger the kids, the more playful, fun, and accessible this is to them. They might not understand horizontal line, but they are going to understand Dash the Duck. And mm-hmm. and the older they get, the more you introduce those actual terms. So I'm going to say horizontal line or vertical line, or counterclockwise circle if they're a little bit older into their second semester. Kindergarten, first grade, that's great vocabulary for them to learn. But now they're comfortable with the movement. They've learned the letters. Now we're going to put the movement and the letters together in a way that they can accomplish and feel accomplished. We use guidelines because we need to be able to reference the tall and the short. Legibility problems often come from kids learning to learn to write with no lines. So their tall letters are the same size as their short letters. Their short letters are the same as their tall. And often they mix their capitals in their lowercase. So Squiggle Squad kind of, you know, compartmentalizes that, makes sure that the tall lowercase letters are tall, like your lowercase letter T is not the same size as your lowercase letter R. And that's the importance of the guidelines. The guideline sizes change with each grade. So they're larger in the pre-K 4, little bit smaller in the kinder, and very small in the first grade. But they continue to have the guidelines so that they can get the formation correct, the sizing and the spacing as well.
Yeah, I think that's super important. I have actually, I mean, that's crazy. I never even thought about like having kids write with outlines. I mean, they kind of do. Like if you give them just like a whiteboard that has no lines on it, I never had whiteboards that didn't have any lines on it. But like, I've never even thought about that. Like that would be really, really hard to be new to handwriting and not have those lines as a guideline, because that's how I taught handwriting is like, hey, we're going to start at the dotted line. And we used, Reading Horizons, I think is what it's called. And they have like, now I can't even think. It's been a couple of years since I've done that. But like, you know, we're at the skyline and then we go down to the grass line, right, up to the whatever, right? So you're like talking using these pictures and stuff. But I think one thing that people don't realize is the mnemonic devices, like what you're talking about. Like just using that mnemonic device of, what did you say? Duck. What was it? Duck.
Dash the duck.
Dash the duck, right? Like just giving them that little piece, it helps pull it back into their, it puts it in their working memory really as something to remember of like, where do I need to go? Oh yeah, I remember now. And that's one thing that kind of drives me a little bit crazy is some people will say like, oh, do not use mnemonic devices, even when you're teaching like a phonics pattern. And I'm like, no, it's so helpful, because if you're having a kid that's trying to spell, right? Let's say we're talking about vowel teams. There are so many vowel teams that say A, that say E. So if you're helping them, because some words, it's just like, no, we're just going to use EA in this. Sometimes it's EE. There's not like a super hard set rule as to when you use each one. Yeah, sometimes it's like the root word and where it comes from. But you're talking a first grader here. Okay, like that is so abstract for them. You're like, okay, this one is Anglo-Saxon. So because it's Anglo-Saxon, like they're going to be like, what? I don't even know what that means. So having that mnemonic device of, okay, we're thinking EA like in leaf, right? And then it helps them to remember. So if they're spelling a word, you're like, think leaf, and they're like, oh, EA, right? Right. So it kind of just helps it bring back, like it gives them that more of that concrete, I would say, aspect to it to use in this abstract thing. So I think that's amazing. And honestly, like I said, I've not ever gone down the rabbit hole of handwriting. And so once my daughter gets older and we're working on those skills, I really would love to give Squiggle Squad a try, because I, like I said, I know very little about handwriting. But really quick, where can people go to connect with your work and learn more about Squiggle Squad if they are interested?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Okay, so squigglesquad.com, it's easy. Under the about page is Holly on Handwriting, which is my blog, and you can find out a little bit more there. You can connect with us on Instagram, of course, and Facebook at Squiggle Squad Handwriting. And you can find me on LinkedIn at Holly Handwriting.
Perfect. And if you can send me over those links, if you want to send me study that you were talking about done by Karen James on the kinesthetic movement, so people can go and read it for themselves if they'd like to. And then also I will have down in the show notes all of the links that you just said. So if anyone's listening, you don't have to like sit here and try to write it down. Although maybe you'll remember it better if you write it down. So maybe do it. But I'll put it down in the show notes so that you can just go to the links easily. But it's been such a pleasure talking to you, Holly, and I've learned so much today and the connection in handwriting and how important it truly is, and that you shouldn't just put it to the wayside, because as a first grade teacher, there is a lot that you have to teach, and there you have so many students in your classroom and you're like, let's go, we have to hurry and get through all of this, right? And you
have to remember but that there are certain things that even if it seems like it's not that important, it is important. And that's one thing that I've learned in this entire conversation is that handwriting instruction is so crucial in what they need to be able to do. And like what I said with my college experience, right? If I didn't have that handwriting experience and I didn't use my note-taking by writing by hand, like I would have struggled in college. I would not have retained what I did. I wouldn't have learned as I did. I wouldn't have been able to use that higher thinking, you know, the higher level of thinking that I needed to use. Like there's just so many things. So I think what you're doing and the work you're doing is so important. And I hope that people check it out, whether you're a homeschool parent, whether you're an educator, whatever, go to your principal, tell them we need this if you're doing this. Thank you. I've had such a great conversation and I think that everyone's going to find a lot of value in this.
Thank you. I hope we can stay connected.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an update. Literacy is the foundation of learning and every child deserves the tools to succeed. If you're ready to take the next step in your child's education, check out my website at k3homeschoolfoundations.com for resources, curriculum, and support to make literacy simple and effective.